Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection for Monday, September 23rd, 2013. Tonight's guest was finishing up a contract job in Alberta when her boss asked her what she planned to do next. Without hesitation, she replied, "I'm going to write books." Two published books, the nonfiction Your Best You, Discovering and Developing the Strengths God Gave You, and the novel Talking to the Dead, and at least one unpublished manuscript later, Bonnie Grove has followed up on that prediction. Bonnie's on the phone with us from her home office in Saskatoon, and we'll be able to talk to her about her writing in a few moments. But before we do, let's listen to Permission to be Broken, the title track from Jennifer Jade Kerr's Permission to be Broken CD.
The mirror's reflection shows me the same thing that it did minutes ago. A bit more concealer, a layer of powder, and a prayer no one looks too.
With Bonnie Grove. Good evening, Bonnie.
Good evening, Robert.
Now, let's start back at the beginning. Let's remind our readers, I'm going back to my days in newspapers. Let's remind our listeners about who you are and what you've been doing. When did you start writing?
Well, when I started writing seriously for a publication, it was about 6 years ago. But of course, that is shored up by a lifetime of writing. For interest and to see if I could do it, but the first real stab came about 6 years ago.
In that time frame, and actually, as you've been, you know, I think in your on your website, you talk about how you started actually writing stories and that when your parents got a typewriter and you started tapping things out. Who have been the authors along the way, and other writers that have influenced you?
Well, I read whatever my mom dropped along the way, which I can't say was, you know, really a great canon of reading at that point. But whatever it was that she threw down that she was done with, what ended up being a lot of things like Harlequin romance novels, which is why my first attempt as a kid to write something was a really poorly done romance novel. That's what I was exposed to. But I also remember reading things that were more kid level. Judy Blume, for example, and her books for girls. I loved stuff like that. I remember a teacher asking me in about sixth grade what kind of books I liked. We were standing in the library, and I felt flummoxed. I didn't know what to choose or how to approach a library to choose things. I hadn't been taught how to do it. And she said, "Well, what kinds of books do you like?" And I remember saying to her, "I like the kind of books that things happen to a girl, and she has to, you know, go through it." And she's like, "Do you mean mysteries?" I'm like, no, I don't mean mysteries. And what I was trying to explain was my love for non-genre literary fiction, but I didn't have the vocabulary to do that. As I grew older, one of my older sisters became a voracious reader, picking up things like Jane Austen and Charles Dickens, and even some modern classics like Gone with the Wind. And so I began reading the books she dropped behind her. And she, I think, honestly, it was one of my sisters who introduced me to great reading and a love for reading over the years. As an adult, when someone put in my hands two different authors, Olive Ann Burns and her Cold Sassy Tree and the unfinished sequel, Leaving Cold Sassy, were revelations to me about how we could approach fiction from a memoir stance, even though it's not really a memoir, but it is. And also Barbara Kingsolver. Someone put in my hands, I think it was Pigs in Heaven was the first one. And it was, again, a revelation to me about language and word choice and all of that. And those two women have been huge inspirations to me as a writer, among many others. But those are two that I love to talk about because I remember the excitement of reading them.
Well, looking at other than those or those two authors, has there been anybody else that, I mean, you've had a chance to do both nonfiction and fiction. Were there other people that were influencing you in terms of just thinking about writing and thinking about that whole process of getting into being a writer?
You know, my whole, I think it's only in retrospect that I even understand how I got to the place of being a writer. I have a memory of, I was a very poor student, as often gifted children are. And I fell into that category of being one of those students that was gifted but overlooked. And I remember the very first time I got a pretty decent grade. It wasn't even stellar, to tell you the truth. It wasn't an A or anything. But it was a pretty good grade, and it was in language arts back in, I don't know, a long time ago. We won't say how long. But I think I was in about fifth grade. And my teacher looked at me and said, "Who helped you with this?" And I said, "No one." And she said, "Well, look at this. Maybe you're good at English." And it was that half encouragement, half incredulous, "I can't believe you're actually doing well." It was enough to spark an idea that maybe I'm good at English. And I ran with that as a kid and just kept immersing myself in that. But also, I found my love for drama and acting really fed into my love for writing. And by the time I was in high school, I was looking at plays by Edward Albee and different people and reading monologues and starting to write my own and performing them in class and in other places. So that all kind of mishmashed, and definitely my theater life and my "you might be good at English" prompt meshed in my adult life, and now they work together to feed off of each other. In terms of nonfiction and in terms of writing life and those kinds of encouragements, I have people in place in my life, real life people that I know and speak to on a regular basis, that we feed into each other's addiction to writing, and we cheer each other on. And then I also have what I call my literary friendships. These are friendships that I formed over time with people that, although we don't speak about, you know, "Oh, hi, how's the kids?" we speak on the level of literary discourse. And people like Arthur Plotnick, who is the author of Spunk and Bite, which is a style writing guide, a sort of modern answer to Strunk and White. And he and I have this wonderful, engaging literary conversation, and he spurs me on to think differently about language and to think differently about how to express an idea using the back door, those kinds of things. So I have people in my life, and then I have people who've inspired me from the page. And then I have you know, my family and all of that. So I have sort of three rings of inspiration and encouragement and support happening all at once.
Well, with that, I think that's going to lead well into our next segment. So we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with our guest, Bonnie Grove. And we'll talk a little bit more about the challenges of writing, especially when the writing seems a lot and doing art seems a lot more difficult than we would like it to be. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station.
Burdened down, cast onto the ground. I am very low. I can't escape this pain. All day I remain in my soul. But I know what this is all about, and I see my way out. So I will turn and run from this.
Arts Connection, you've been listening to I Repent from the Permission to be Broken CD by Jennifer Jade Kerr, who's planning a concert tour through Ontario this fall, so check her website out for details on that. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with Bonnie Grove. Bonnie, you were talking before we went to break about the people that you find that support you and encourage you. And I find that one of the challenges that most writers and you know, most artists for that matter face is that their art is primarily a solitary activity. You know, it's the painter in front of the blank canvas, the writer in front of the blank screen with the blinking cursor. When you get to that point where you're looking at the screen or even if you're looking at editing out, you know, material, does it ever get to the point where you felt like, you know, what's the use? Why do I even continue doing this type of thing?
I think I've had those thoughts. Usually, like you say, when you're staring at what looks like writer's block or you're staring at a manuscript that you have no idea what the future is going to hold for this, whether anyone's ever going to read it, that sort of thing. In moments like that, you have to sort of shake yourself out of that despair, because it's missing the point, I think. And we all have those moments, and we all are entitled to those moments, but that's what it should be, about a moment. And then you need to shake yourself out of that despair. I honestly believe, Robert, that if all of the artists in the world stopped producing art, every single person that has never had any kind of accolades, that's never been published, that's never been shown anywhere, if we all just stopped, I think the earth would die. I think the meaning of life would be drained from the earth. I honestly, and this sounds romantic, but I really believe that the reason the world keeps spinning is because people are out there doing art and making it beautiful. And the difference it brings to who we are as a human race is all the difference in the world. I think that art for art's sake is a real truth, And if we are producing something that is beautiful and true and praiseworthy and all of those things, then I think that we are sort of responsible a little bit for the beauty that's happening in the world, for the changes in attitudes, for the cultural pointing towards something better. Art does that, even if only a handful of people witness it. And so if you believe that, and if that's the cloak you're wearing on your shoulders as you're pushing forward in a project, there's hope for that project because you believe in it for its own sake, as opposed to believing in it because you think it has a shot of being published or shown or recorded or whatever it is. You know, if musicians have different ways of doing things, and sculptors and painters and so many different ways of art being done. It isn't just about public consumption. It's about the need for the soul to be expressed.
Well, and looking at that, I think to me that also comes down to the fact that a lot of artists that I've talked to, even those that don't have any kind of faith background, they refer to their art as a calling. And those of us who are Christians know that calling is quite frequently a calling from God. How does knowing that help with what you were saying in terms of that desire to go on, that desire to continue to create art?
Mm-hmm. I think what it does is it makes the well deep. The well that you draw from to create art, when you feel it's a calling, it makes the well very deep, and it gives you the ability to grow as an artist, to grow your sensitivity, to grow your aesthetic, to grow your own voice, and to walk out in courage. Because artists, more than any other group of people that I know of, have to be courageous in the face of public scrutiny. Perhaps hockey players would know what I mean. You know, when you make a mistake, a big red bell goes off.
Yeah, that's the goaltender usually.
The goaltender, right. See, I'm not much of a sport. See, I should really just knock off the sports analogies. But anyway, I really think that we are the kinds of people who have to put our hearts and our souls into something and then hold it up to public scrutiny. Even if that public scrutiny is just a single reader or viewer or listener, or it's just our mom, we have this bizarre need to take the etchings and the scrapings from our soul and show them to others and say, if this resonates with you, I hope it helps. I hope this heals, you know, that kind of thing. So it makes the well deep. There's a bit of an inherent danger, and I've seen this in inspirational writer circle, where the calling of God feels more like a mandate to be foisted onto others. That's not a good way to approach. You know, if you feel called by God to write, that doesn't mean that particular agent or editor or publisher should feel the same calling as you do.
I have a friend of mine, and you probably know her as well, who said, you know, she often got people submitting things to their publication saying, God told me to send this to you. And she always had this innate desire to want to say back, yes, but God hasn't told me to publish it.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And the reason that, you know, people say, but God really did tell me to do that. It's like, well, yeah, but sweetie, God told you to do that for his reasons and for your benefit. And whatever his reasons are and your benefit is, that should be enough. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to hit the big time. Well, I know a lot of Christians going into publishing, and they're so excited. And I remember being in that place, too. It was like, oh, it's going to be amazing, you know, and they even get a contract, and the book comes out, and it just fizzles. And the next book doesn't get picked up, and, you know, on and on and on, and all of a sudden, you know, 4 years later, and I might be talking a little bit autobiographically here, 4 years later, you're sort of in the writer's soup, not quite sure where you're going to be, what's happening next, you know, what's the next step, where's the next paycheck coming from, what are we going to do? And you still can't walk out of that calling. You still can't say, well, I'm not a writer anymore because it's not working out. But you also can't say, well, God, I guess because I haven't reached this particularly defined way of being successful, that it must not be from you. That's not true either.
Well, and I find that one of the biggest challenges that I've often found as a writer and as a journalist is you put your stuff out there, and you either get no feedback at all, you don't hear from anybody about whether, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, or if you do hear from someone, the only things you hear back are the criticisms. You know, the letters to the editor that say the article was terrible and, you know, the person should stop writing. Again, how do you get past that, especially when, you know, in light of what we've been talking about here, in that innate sense of this is what God has created me for. You know, he's created me to create. But how do I take those slings and arrows and do something with them?
Mm-hmm. And that's really, you know, the mission of life, isn't it? We come into this world and we have a certain set of circumstances that we have to deal with, good, bad, or otherwise. Good parents, bad parents, you know, all that kind of thing. And we have to sort of make our way. Art's very much like that. It reflects the journey of life. And the struggle of art is the struggle of life in many ways. So to be able to understand more intuitively that what you are trudging through is in its own way a reflection of trudging through life, and that it should be somewhat difficult and it should be somewhat challenging because that's how you grow, and that kind of perseverance is the only thing that in the end produces great art. Anyone who first puts their hand to a task of art, they're terrible. I mean, of course, they've never done it before. And they become increasingly better and better and better through analyzing mistakes, through accidental successes. All of those kinds of things grow us as a writer. One of the things, or as an artist, one of the things that I've learned over time is don't read the reviews. Just don't read them. Because if you're going to take to heart every good review you get, you're also, transversely, going to take to heart every bad review you get. And you will get them. So, I don't read them. I don't read them. Other people read them. People around me do. My husband will sometimes come and say, oh, did you know you had, like, you know, 5 new reviews on Amazon? And I'll say, no, I didn't know that. And I'll keep going on with what I'm... And he will say, well, you know, they were pretty good. Well, that's great. Wonderful. But you see, I wrote that book a long time ago, and I've moved on as an artist, and I have to leave it to the people who are consuming it, because that's the trick of art, is that you create something, you put it out there, and it's no longer yours. It now belongs to the people who read it, who watch it, who listen to it.
Well, we need to end on that and take a quick break, and one final break, and be back to wrap up our conversation with Bonnie Grove, who's an author. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station.
Brand new morning and climb out of bed. Sun is shining, time to get myself fed. Good cup of coffee, scrambled eggs. Sit down on the floor and stretch out my legs and think it'd be silly to dive in. Lock out the sunshine and pull on the gray. It's time for a happy song. I think I've been sad too long. So what if the pain's not gone? I need to let it go. It's time to let the joy back in. Say goodbye to where I'm
from. Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Jennifer Jade Kerr's happy song from her CD, Permission to be Broken. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to finish up our conversation with Bonnie, with author Bonnie Grove. Bonnie, just before we went to break, you'd mentioned about that whole thing of moving on from where you were with your last book. What is on your agenda? What are you doing and working on right now?
Well, I'm writing novels. I'm focusing on novels. And I'm moving away from the inspirational market, which in the States is the initials are CBA, They tend to be the books that when you go to the Christian bookstore, those are the books that you would find on the shelf, the novels you'd find there. And I'm moving away from that niche market into the general market, which is if you go to any other bookstore, those are the books that you would find there. And that transition has been really educational and painful, and I'm creating the kinds of stories that I really like. I think for me, they're more honest stories, told in a more honest voice than I think I was really allowed to use in the inspirational market. A lot of my stuff was changed and even censored to a certain degree, which I found it tied my hands a bit more than I thought was necessary. Although I respect their reasons and it's their business and I understand that, but it doesn't have to be what I do. And so I made the decision not to do that anymore and moved into the secular market. But that process is long and difficult and a lot of waiting and patience involved there. So continuing to create novels that express better, I think, my sensibilities and where I think culture could be going, the heart of culture could be going. And I think that's one of the keys of being an artist is to say, I want to have a voice in the future of my culture and where it goes to and what it looks at. And so that's my attempt as a writer.
Good. Well, just quickly, where can people find out more information about you?
My website, bonniegrove.com.
And Bonnie, thanks very much for your time tonight.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Arts Connection. Thank you tonight to my guest, Bonnie Grove. And a quick if you miss this program and you want to listen to it in an archive, look for it on our website at www.salemministries.ca. And be sure to tune in next week for another look where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, email robert@salawministries, that's S-E-L-A-W ministries.ca, or follow us on Twitter at Selaw13, S-E-L-A-W-13. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.
You've been listening to Arts Connection, a production of Selaw Ministries. Be sure to tune in again next Thursday evening at 10, right here on Faith FM.